function, actually.
So it's very important. Then there's the point, an additional point for us, that is the importance of the founder Acharya. And we've quoted Bhaktivinoda Thakur here. This is a very nice quote. The founder Acharya is the principal Siksha Guru. The founder Acharya of the Sampradaya is the principal Siksha Guru for the entire disciplic succession. Speculations that contradict his teachings are to be immediately rejected. Only a saintly devotee who's understood the teachings of the principal Siksha Guru is eligible to be a Diksha Guru for others. If one thinks that he can be initiated by an unauthorized guru or a Mayavadi into these teachings, he errs severely. He'll never attain Krishna consciousness. I imagine you were all there that one Sunday program in which we read the letter from the GBC body, and we made mention of the fact that there was a proposal. There was a proposal put to the GBC body that Srila Prabhupada, that ISKCON be declared a sampradaya, as distinct from, you know, it's already happened. There was the Brahma Sampradaya, then Madhvacharya came, so then it became Brahma Madhva. And Brahma Madhva Sampradaya is a little different from the Brahma Sampradaya. And actually the Brahma Sampradaya is still existing in India. There is still the Brahma Sampradaya without Madhva. The same ideas coming from Brahma, but before Madhva came and made his contribution. So there's still some sort of remnants of that Brahma Sampradaya, but unfortunately it's lacking that contribution that Madhva made. That is a very important contribution. And then Lord Chaitanya came along, and then the followers of Madhvacharya, everything got updated by Lord Chaitanya. So even now the Brahma Madhva people, actually they're a little bit out of touch. They're a little bit out of touch. They missed out on the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Yeah, they're a little mixed up. One of our devotees, Bhakti Vikash Swami, you may have heard of him, he writes for BTG sometimes. He went to Udupi, which is the headquarters of the Brahma Madhva, the Madhva Sampradaya. And at that time, several years ago, there had been some gurus who had fallen down in ISKCON, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, actually. So he went and asked the people, the Acharya, the main head at the Udupi headquarters of Madhvacharya, have you ever had this happen? Did you ever have it happen? And he said, yes. We've had people deviate. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes, he saw it like that. But of course the fact is, and you know, they know that we are in this line from Lord Chaitanya, and we kind of connect it to them, but we make a distinction, and we consider it very important, that distinction, the contribution of Lord Chaitanya. But they got a little left behind, and they think it's a deviation. So anyway, we had this idea came up in the GBC meetings of declaring the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, Bhakti Vedanta Sampradaya. And everyone thought it was a great idea. It is a great idea. But anyway, they were just a little, they thought they should think it out, think their sort of presentation out more clearly, because they might offend some of Prabhupada's godbrothers and their followers, which undoubtedly would be the case. But unfortunately, it's not a matter of not doing it, it's just a matter of trying to make it as gentle as possible with them. Because the fact is that those people who are trying to practice Krishna consciousness now, separate from Srila Prabhupada, you know, it's like the Madhvacharya people, they got sort of a little left behind. And it's a very important thing. So here we have it, the importance of the founder Acharya, particularly in our cases. And Srila Prabhupada himself says that somewhere in the fourth canto, that anyone who thinks they can become Krishna conscious, independent of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is living in a great hallucination. Have you read that? Are you reading Srimad Bhagavatam? Did you read that? Yeah, well, I'm sure you would have noticed it if you're reading. Yeah, so this is a very important thing. And then, as far as that goes, there is that resolution, you remember, about the three-in-one resolution. We also read it out one Sunday program. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah? I've got it here. There's a preamble. Whereas, allegiance in principle should be one and undivided, yet devotees in ISKCON sometimes feel their allegiance to their spiritual master and their allegiance to ISKCON, that they are not intrinsically related and could become separated. You know, like the spiritual master might decide he wants to go up and form his own institution, actually. That's specifically what they're getting at. Whereas there's sometimes evidence of irresolution among devotees in ISKCON as to the priorities of their allegiance to their spiritual master on one hand and their allegiance to ISKCON on the other. Whereas, to strengthen the devotee's commitment, there is a need for a clear and unequivocal understanding of how our allegiance is one and indivisible. Therefore be it hereby resolved that the GBC hereby issues the statement on allegiance. For all devotees in ISKCON, allegiance to the spiritual master and allegiance to ISKCON must be understood as two manifest features of one and the same indivisible allegiance. The reason for this is that all devotees in ISKCON, whether they act as spiritual masters or not, are equally bound by the order of the founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada has enjoined us repeatedly to serve him cooperatively within the framework of ISKCON. ISKCON is the instrument which Srila Prabhupada crafted by his own hands for our service to him, and which, in virtue of his position as founder Acharya, continues to be his manifest body for receiving personal service from us. Consequently, for a devotee to serve the spiritual master in the line of Srila Prabhupada and to serve ISKCON are simply two different aspects of a single service to Srila Prabhupada. Consequently, devotees in ISKCON have only one allegiance, which is manifest in three features: allegiance to the Guru, to ISKCON, and to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. So the importance of the founder Acharya. Very, very important for us as members of ISKCON, as devotees. Because basically anyone independent of Srila Prabhupada nowadays, even though they may be somewhat Krishna conscious, but it's just like, it's kind of like the mud for people. They're just a little out of touch. And the difference that being out of touch makes will become more and more manifest as time goes on. Then third point is an example. We give an example of some people who disobeyed the orders of their spiritual master. And it's the same Gaudiya Mutt. Prabhupada himself writes, pardon me for reading so much, the words Daivira Karan, this is Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 12. If you want to read what Srila Prabhupada thinks about the Gaudiya Mutt, read Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 12, and you will get a clear picture of what Srila Prabhupada thinks about the Gaudiya Mutt. So this is the purport to verse 8. The words Daivira Karan indicate that by the dint of providence or by God's will, the followers of Advaita Acharya divided into two parties. Even Advaita Acharya, isn't that amazing? He's an incarnation of God. and his people divided into two. In his presence, such disagreement among the disciples of one Acharya is also found among the members of the Gaudiya Mutt. In the beginning, during the presence of Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Pariraj Kacharyas Tarasara Shishimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, all the devotees worked in agreement, but just after his disappearance they disagreed. One party strictly followed the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but another group created their own concoction about executing his desires. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, at the time of his departure, requested all his disciples to form a governing body and conduct missionary activities cooperatively. He did not instruct a particular man to become the next Acharya, but just after his passing away, his leading secretaries made plans without authority to occupy the post of Acharya, and they split into two factions over who the next Acharya would be. Consequently, both factions were asara, or useless, because they had no authority, having disobeyed the order of the spiritual master. Thing is, it's traditional in India that every spiritual institution has a head who's called the Acharya, and he is the chief. Basically, what he says goes, and everyone's under him. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta didn't want that. However, his disciples were kind of conditioned to that idea just by their upbringing. So they found it very difficult to manage things cooperatively, because people tend to have their own ideas. And they thought it would just be simpler if they could make one person the Acharya. He could just say everything and people would just accept him, and you wouldn't have to worry about discussing things and going back and forth. So they elected one fellow, I think his name was Kunja Bihari. Unfortunately, he didn't make it. Unfortunately, he ran off with one lady who was some sort of low-class lady, obviously. He ran off with one lady and became quite degraded. It was a story quite similar to the Ajamil story, if you're familiar with that. There were really some pretty clear similarities. And in the end, she killed him. Yes, she killed him. So he was like the leader, you know, being the Acharya, he's like the main one who disobeyed the order of the spiritual master in the main way. And, you know, just see. Then we've even had personal experience. We had, as our GBC here, going back 82 was the end, so that's 16 years ago, Jayatirtha, and who I knew very well indeed, but he also got some strange ideas in his head and tried to become, you know, the LSD Acharya, which also didn't work. It really didn't work. And in the end, well, it's a bit of a gory story, but in the end, his main follower, his right-hand man, well, actually what happened was Jayatirtha declared himself to be Krishna, you know, which is a step up from being the Acharya. Being the Acharya is pretty big, but what's next? What's higher? Well, the only thing that's left is to become God. So he decided, he wasn't satisfied being the independent LSD Acharya. So he declared himself Krishna, and then he ran off with the girlfriend of his right-hand man. These things happen in this world. And declared her to be Radha. Anyway, Radha and Krishna didn't make it. And Radha left Krishna. Well, maybe Krishna left Radha and adopted another Radha, or Chandravali, perhaps. So Radha ended up fried with Krishna and went back to the right-hand man and complained like mad about Krishna. How could Krishna leave Radha? And the right-hand man, who was also like an up-and-coming LSD acharya, he said, right, this is unbonafide. Krishna cannot leave Radha. So as a reaction for this offense, he must die. So he killed him. Yes. And cut his head off, actually. Placed his body in a lotus position, you know, sitting cross-legged. Put his hands down like this and put his head in his hands. And sat there and waited for the police to come. Hare Krishna. So, don't disobey the orders of a spiritual master. Okay. Please, don't do that. And particularly not in some special way. But don't in any way. Don't in any way. Because you'll find that the orders of the spiritual master, they're like a boat, you could say. As long as you stay on the boat, and we're floating across this ocean of material existence, and it's really rough. You know, it's really rough, this material ocean. So you've got to stay on the boat, and even though it may get bumpy sometimes, and you may feel a little seasick sometimes, but don't think that the answer is to jump out of the boat of the orders of the spiritual master. And that means one's own spiritual master, if, you know, as in the cases of most, or perhaps all of you, your spiritual master is one of the current spiritual masters. So it means stay on the boat of his instructions, but it also means to stay on the boat of Srila Prabhupada's instructions. Yeah. And when you know, we have these three standards, you could say, for knowledge. Sadhu, Shastra, Guru. Out of them, the highest standard is Shastra. In order for a Guru or a Sadhu to be accepted as a Guru or a Sadhu, their teachings have to conform with Shastra. Not that they can innovate and, you know, contradict Shastra and expect to be accepted as bona fide. So similarly, in terms of what we were reading from the GBC resolutions a few minutes ago, in order for a Guru to be bona fide in ISKCON, they have to be in conformity with Srila Prabhupada. And he has the higher position. They cannot innovate and contradict Srila Prabhupada and say, expect to be taken seriously. Okay, so that's something about the third offense. Of course, there's so much we could say about that. But, as I said, we're running out of time. So we'll move on now to the fourth offense, to blaspheme the Vedic literature, or literature in pursuance of the Vedic version. And we give one quotation from Chaitanya Charitamrita. E kalikale ara nahi ko na dharma Vaishnava Vaishnava Shastra E kahe marama. In this age of Kali, there are no genuine religious principles other than those established by Vaishnava devotees and Vaishnava scriptures. This is the sum and substance of everything. Sometimes it's said that the spiritual master is like the captain of the ship. You heard that? Actually, it's in the Bhagavatam, one of the verses, I think. Yeah. Vyasadeva, I think, is glorified as the captain of the ship for those who want to cross the dangerous ocean of Kali. So the spiritual master, as the representative of Vyasadeva, is like that. He's guiding us. But the scriptures, they are like the map book, you could say. The spiritual master is giving the personalized direction in terms of you and your own situation like that. But the scriptures are giving the general directions. Chant Hare Krishna. And in a more general sense. In Nectar of Devotion, if you're familiar with Nectar of Devotion, you'll know that Rupa Goswami at the beginning of chapter 6 talks about how there are general instructions and detailed instructions. The general instructions are generally found in Shastra. And the detailed instructions means more like for you as an individual, generally, like that. So in this sense, the Vedic literatures are giving the general directions for how to practice Krishna consciousness, and the spiritual master is helping you personally. It's more like that. Krishna consciousness is a personal process. So anyway, the Vedic scriptures therefore are definitely essential, and we shouldn't think that we've become more intelligent than Srila Vyasadeva or Lord Krishna or Lord Chaitanya, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Then there are some forms of this offense, different forms. There's a couple of different forms of this offense that I thought we could note. Is everyone awake? Are any of you asleep? Try and stay awake. Yes, you can fan yourself. You see, Mataji is demonstrating. She will sell you a fan, or you can make one yourself. Fan yourself if you're feeling hot. Otherwise, you could always stand up. So some forms of this offense. There are two forms of this offense mentioned in Nectar of Instruction. Of course, there are many forms. With any of these offenses, we could have just a whole course on any one of them. But here we're drawn out two particular forms of this offense. Do you know what I'm talking about? Nectar of Instruction. Have you read Nectar of Instruction? Who hasn't? Put your hand up if you haven't read Nectar of Instruction. Have not read. Okay. So most of you have. Now can you think, those of you who have read it, can you think there is a very clear instruction in Nectar of Instruction about following instructions? Hare Krishna. It's all to do with instructions. Are you familiar with the term? Niyamagraha. Are you familiar with that term? Those of you who have read Nectar of Instruction. Niyamagraha. It's a compound word, which can be interpreted in two ways. Niyama agraha or niyama agraha. Yeah. So niyama agraha means that you follow. Prabhupada says, accepting some of the scriptural rules and regulations for immediate benefit, as utilitarians advocate, is called niyama agraha. And neglecting the rules and regulations of the shastras, which are meant for spiritual development, is called niyama agraha. The word agraha, perhaps I should write it on the board. The word agraha means being like overly eager to accept. You become a rules and regulations fanatic.
I remember.
I had one really good experience of that. There was this one devotee who had heard that Srila Prabhupada had said, I don't know whether it was really true or not, but he heard that Prabhupada had said that if you eat more than 9 chickpeas, you know what a chickpea is? Chana, it's basically a form of chana. If you eat more than 9 in a day, this is maya, this is bad for you. It's very passionate food. That's true. So we were on traveling Sankirtan, and we would have chickpeas sometimes, and he would count the number. Yes, and if we had more than 9, he would get on our cases. In all seriousness, he would be very, very upset. So here we have niyamagraha. And that long A which has the line over it, that indicates, I assume you're familiar with these symbols in our transliterated Sanskrit, long A. But it can be either a combination of niyama agraha or niyama agraha. So the fact that it's not, that Rupa Goswami doesn't go to great length to make the point that it's one or the other, means that it can be applied, either understanding can be applied. So niyama agraha means you become a rules and regulations fanatic, a very touchy sort of person who's always checking people out and finding fault like that. But niyama agraha means you don't take the rules and regulations seriously enough. Just like one, you know, we have the four regulative principles. So sometimes you get people who are struggling with them, and they try to, they can't follow them all, so they try to justify it. You know, there's one fellow, he made a slogan, three for me. How's that? Three for me. I don't know which three, and which was the odd one out. But he made a little slogan like that. Yeah. And you get this type of person, they'll come to you, or you may hear them preaching to some, one of these borderline types of people, types of devotees, that, you know, why do you put yourself into anxiety by artificially repressing yourself? You know, you should just, you know, if you feel like doing something, just do it. It's all right. You know, Krishna's merciful. He'll forgive you. So, yeah, you get people like that. And in Nectar of Devotion, you'll see that in the earlier parts where Srila Prabhupada is discussing association and the dangers of association with non-devotees, he talks about two types of non-devotees. He talks about those, or two types of dangerous association. Association with those who are not devotees, and association with those who are too materialistic, but they are devotees. Yeah. So that association with people, with devotees who are too materialistic, this is very dangerous. Particularly if you're a neophyte, like a Kanishta Adhikari. The Kanishta Adhikari's consciousness, mind, can be changed easily by some opposing argument. So if someone comes along advocating that smoking dukkha every now and then is okay, as long as you don't do it too often, then some people, or something like that, you know, watching TV, it's our fifth regulative principle. Anyway, it's there somewhere. But actually it comes under the fourth, it comes under gambling actually. Yeah, useless activity. So, yeah, you may get some people, they tell them, look, you know, it's okay. There's a good program on educational program like The Bold and the Beautiful. You can watch it a little bit. I mean, what the heck? Don't repress yourself. Repression. You know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, what will repression accomplish? He says that. He says it. It's there in black and white. What will repression accomplish? So you see, it's okay. Yeah, it's all right. Don't repress yourself. Repression is dangerous. Did you know that? Repression is dangerous. You know, down in Cape Town a while ago, a couple of years ago, a few years ago, we were very active there on the campus, we still are, and a few Jewish youngsters were joining our society on campus. And the Jewish society reacted very strongly. And they had a whole campaign against the Hare Krishnas. And one of the main parts was about our being vegetarian. So they got one of their big rabbis to write an article for their campus newsletter magazine thing. And he wrote an article that this vegetarianism is very dangerous. It's extremely dangerous. Because eating meat is natural.
And if you repress some natural urge, it'll build up in you, just like if you compress a spring. It builds up, and then finally you let it go, and then bang. You know, really. So if you repress your natural urges, after a while it'll just build up and it'll explode. Just explode, and it'll just completely be a mess.